Welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
The 10-minute window will be narrowed, and my aim basically is that you get away from having uncertainty and you just have definitive points at which everything will occur and everyone is expecting that to occur. So it makes everything from ground handling to air traffic control more efficient. It makes the experience better for all of us as passengers. So that's where I see us going.
Extended, your aerospace radio station.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Finishing off our focus on how the use of data and machine learning is changing the sector, we're joined by Andy Taylor, who is the Chief Solution Officer at NATS. For those unfamiliar with NATS, it's the UK's leading provider of air traffic control services, as well as providing air traffic control services to airports, airlines, air traffic service providers, and governments across Europe, the Middle East, and Asia. So, Andy, with that, welcome to Extended.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Delighted to have you here. Honoured to have you here. I know your time's very special, but we just thought this would be the culmination of all of our discussions around how data, AI, machine learning is changing the sector, because the stuff that NATS is doing is very innovative and driving massive change across the sector. But before we go on to talk about that, I'm fascinated a bit by your career. It's a great title, Chief Solutions Officer. Tell us the journey that you've been on to get to the point that we're at today.
Yeah, it's actually, I'm glad you're doing that, because my background is operational as an air traffic controller with NATS. So I've worked at many airports doing tower control and also the approach radar function, which takes the aircraft out of the airport and also sequences them in. So I'm very much an airport operations focused expert. I have worked around the world doing consultancy on behalf of NATS for airports and air traffic service providers. And I also worked for a period of time for the European Air Traffic Control Agency, Eurocontrol. All of it through NATS contracts, but that was as a special advisor to airports. It's a 30 plus year career, which focuses on particularly airport operations and improving those. And more recently, I've worked with Searidge Technologies, who are wholly owned by NATS, but remain an independent company based in Ottawa in Canada. And they are the leading supplier of digital towers to airports and air traffic service providers around the world, and to NATS within the UK. So my job with them is to bring the operational knowledge and the focus of what is needed at airports, along with the technology and artificial intelligence and all the other smart things that that they have already. So hopefully, yeah, that's a quick whistle-stop tour that that will mean that people are maybe not expecting me to be an engineer and know all about the ones and zeros side of things, but certainly to be able to put this into context of how we can make the most of this for airport operations.
Right. Let me take you back then, Andy. I do need to take you back to some of those early days, because I want to put some context around how NATS performs now to how it did when you started and came into your career. When you talk about working in the tower and then progressing onto to bigger airports like Gatwick and Glasgow. What sort of technology were you using back then? How did it work then?
Yeah, so when I first worked in an air traffic control tower, in fact, that was at Birmingham Airport in the early 1990s. And back then, we used all the same sort of basic procedures that we do today, but we had a lot less in terms of support technology. So all of our surveillance as to what was happening on the airport was out of the window, using our own eyes, binoculars, and effectively putting all of the flight data manually onto paper strips. We did have radars in the tower, but that was predominantly to see aircraft that were airborne and either sort of above cloud or at some distance from the airport. During my time there, we introduced surface movement radar, so we could actually see the surface and what was happening in reduced visibility. And that's now very commonplace around regional airports, and certainly in terms of major airports, the surveillance systems have improved significantly. It's still very recognisable today in comparison to what I joined as. So it's been a slow evolution in terms of technology, but I think we're on the sort of exponential uptick in terms of the technology now that's being developed and deployed.
Right. Let's talk then about how NATS and its predecessors came through the sort of last decade or two. How's it evolved to embrace the emerging technologies? You know, 10, 15 years ago, most of us didn't have an iPhone or the equivalent Android or whatever phone that does pretty much everything. What's the journey that NATS has been on over the last decade or so in embracing that sort of digital explosion in terms of what is now capable?
Yeah, well, I suppose, to be honest, it would be kind of like the personal journey that I've been on with airports over that period of time. You know, certainly that encompasses from when I was running the operation for the tower at London Gatwick, and then working very closely with the airport operator there in terms of performance improvement programs. And back then, sort of 20 early 2000s, 2010 kind of time, there was a lot of change happening on the terminal side, and we're seeing lots of technology coming in, lots of change, and that is very much aligned with the ubiquity of iPhones and that the effect that has had in terms of how people interact with the airlines, how they book tickets, how they then progress through an airport using digital rather than paper means. So lots of changes, lots of new starters coming into airport operations, terminal side. On the flip side of it, where I've focused my career has been from the parking stands out onto the taxiways, the runways and the airspace around the airport. It's been a slower adoption of technology, but it has still been progressing, that's for certain. So we get more data sharing through things like the collaborative decision making CDM initiative that has been very much focused on in Europe. So major airports trying to ensure that everybody's working towards more of a common plan through sharing, and sharing that information out into the wider network between airports and to other airports. But in terms of the kind of where we are now, that sort of higher level of detail is now being pushed down to the level of detail I think we were working at inside the terminals 15 years ago. So, you know, we are looking at more digitization. We are looking at deployment of capability in terms of processing, so that air traffic controllers and airport operations and airline operations can work more efficiently together and work to a much tighter plan. Because again,
Is that a major change, Andy? Sort of 20, 30 years ago when air traffic control was almost like a standalone service in its own right, back in the day when I was young and fingers in the fence at Heathrow, there was no such thing as Eurocontrol, and there wasn't that liaison with the airlines in particular. Is that something that's driven this change to be in a more harmonious type service, or is it just sheer volume that's come in to be so almost to the point of so overwhelming that we've had to make those sorts of changes?
Yeah, well, I think it's a bit of both. I mean, NATS has always been at the forefront in terms of working very closely with airports and with airlines. Because of the nature of the UK airspace being quite small, but very heavy demand, particularly in terms of the southeast, where you've got five major airports, six runways, that are all very adjacent to each other when you compare them to other major cities. So the density of traffic is significant, and therefore anything that you do in terms of impact on a normal day's operation can be more significant. So we've been working very closely to try and ensure that things like strong winds at Heathrow have less of an impact in terms of the arrival rate. So previously, people with my kind of training would basically be providing a sequence of traffic into an airport, into Heathrow, and that would be based on an assessment of distance using a radar display. Now, that means that when you land into a strong headwind and the headwind changes as aircraft descend into the airport, has an effect on the spacing that's been set up by air traffic control, which means that we reduce our throughput. So by changing things from a distance base between two aircraft to a time-based where the interval remains the same is a way of improving that kind of flow. And we've done that through technology that NATS has developed and then deployed through partner organisations. So we have that in place. We've had that in place at Heathrow since 2015. And that kind of marginal gain sort of approach is now, it's gone from the how can we change our procedures and techniques and training to be able to get as much as we can out of it, to the point that the demand and the effect of small impacts like weather, we need more help. So we need the technology to help us. And that's what we focused on and we continue to focus on now.
And as those sorts of margins become so much finer as you know, the power of new computing and some of the machine learning technologies, are they helping us to drive that change now with their capabilities that were unforeseen, I suppose, even, you know, a decade ago, some of the things we couldn't have dreamt of being able to do, we can now do. And, you know, we talk about the digital tower and things like that in a moment. How much is the technology driving the change and the need for change pushing the technology?
So I think it's very much, certainly our approach is it's the need for change that drives the technology. You know, it's not technology for technology's sake. The people that we have in our organization, the air traffic controllers, the support controllers, are highly trained, highly skillful. You know, we've exported that skill set around the world in terms of consultancy services. But because the pressure on, you know, multiple factors to be able to make decisions, to be able to support changing conditions, but keep the flow as predictable as possible, that's where it starts to get to the stage where human, you know, sort of processing, mental processing is neither fast enough nor capable enough to take as many factors into consideration. So you absolutely need to digitize and to be able to have computerized support. And certainly in terms of what we can do now with that computerized support, using artificial intelligence rather than programmed fixed algorithms certainly helps us, because obviously it's quicker to program using AI training than it is to write out all the different kind of scenarios that could occur and then code those. Plus, it's in terms of pattern recognition, which is actually really what you could describe air traffic control as. You know, that you are, you know, it's managing and recognizing and managing patterns when you look at the flows of traffic. So AI is very well suited in terms of the way that it can learn around the kind of patterns that should be flowing and how to adjust those. So, you know, that's kind of that's the way it's leading, in my opinion, on demand rather than the technology sort of pushing us in a particular direction.
Yeah. Now, an overriding driving force behind anything you do is obviously the safety of those people, that equipment, and those individuals who are using the services. Let's go on to talk about runway safety and how you're maximizing the capacity and minimizing the risk. Tell us how NATS is going about doing that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's good that you highlight safety, because clearly for air traffic control, that's our prime task. At the same time, though, the simplest thing safety-wise would be, well, you limit the number of aircraft and you keep them as far apart as possible. But that's not achievable in terms of one in or one out kind of thing. You need to be able to keep a flow of traffic moving, and actually increasing the amount of flow doesn't necessarily increase the amount of risk or effect on safety, because in actual fact a well-running machine will run far better than something that's constructed on the hoof kind of thing. So using sort of continuous processes, but using as much data as possible to support the humans and integrating the systems is in fact the way to improve the way that the system performs and also how safe it is. So, I mean, you asked about runway safety. From our perspective, having good surveillance is the starting point. So that's, both the humans and also then the systems. So I mentioned earlier, with various levels of surveillance from surface movement radars to now we have multilateration, where the transponders of the aircraft provide us with additional information.
Sorry, Andy, what does that term mean?
So that's basically where, again, it's another digital form of surveillance. So rather than a radar where it turns and sends out a signal that bounces back off of an aircraft or other objects, a multilateration system effectively is a range of passive sensors that you spread around an airport surface, and they receive signals from the aircraft's onboard transponder, so a radio broadcast from the aircraft, which inside of that broadcast, it tells us lots of information from the aircraft systems, and it also gives us identification and position. So that provides us with an improved level of information, which can be displayed and processed on top of the raw surface movement radar pictures. And then we're also adding in digitized optical view camera data, basically. Rather than today's world where, or I say today's world is a world with digital towers and digital data in it. But rather than the world of just looking out of the window and effectively then the controller having to look at separate data systems and then process that themselves. So if you consider a team of, maybe half a dozen controllers inside of an air traffic control tower, each of them is processing that same data individually, comparing it to common systems individually. So there's a lot of overlap in terms of the amount of workload they're carrying out. If we put cameras and we digitize that out of the window view, there's about 70% of the information that controllers are using is now digital, which would have been analog and views from the window. That can actually be run into systems and processed, used by AI. or it can be processed by the human, but you're able to give views which are perhaps brought closer because the cameras can be placed around the airport. And so there's never a part of the airport which is more than a few hundred meters away. Whereas when you're sitting in a physical control tower, you're in one position on the airfield, and the further away you get on the extremities of an airport, and look at somewhere like Heathrow, and it's probably, you know, sort of 5 or 6 kilometers corner to corner distance. So if the air traffic control tower's in the center, you clearly have better amounts of data around the visual information that you can see directly outside of the window versus the stuff that's maybe 5 kilometers away. With cameras, I can give more of an equal view wherever the view is taken from the airport tower, and it's processed. So it can be pre-processed video, radar, the multilateration that I talked about, and other surveillances and other data, all processed together and then provided to the team of controllers. So you've actually, you've taken out a huge amount of mental work for the whole team, where they can then add their skills on top of. And that's where the safety can be enhanced, because you're not requiring them to do the same data processing, all scan, you know, because you have to, you can only look in one direction. Cameras look in all directions, and the processing, particularly the AI processing, can look in all directions simultaneously. So you're adding in huge amounts of extra processing power and potential safety surveillance elements. So this is how it kind of improves in terms of, you know, kind of the quality of the information that we have as to what's going on outside. You then add in other functions. We've been testing at Heathrow what we describe as a hold line surveillance system. And that is the line that the aircraft wait clear of the runway before they depart, or in fact, the point if they've landed on the runway where they are classed as being clear of that runway. That's the area that we're managing as air traffic controllers, both from an efficiency and safety perspective. So by putting camera surveillance out there, taking in the various radar data sources, and then training the AI to monitor aircraft and vehicles on that runway helps, because an air traffic controller can monitor and look along the 4 kilometer strip, but they cannot take the whole 4 kilometer view in one go. Yeah. A digital system can. So that's how safety can be enhanced for a runway.
Wow. My brain's exploding with the volume of things that you've just described being integrated together. But we all know that's the way that the world and technology is unfolding. Is some of those concepts, is that what we're using in the digital tower now? And where are we operating digital towers?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the first deployments of digital towers were really just an electronic version of the physical control tower. So the cameras were placed to provide an out-of-the-window view, and the windows of a physical control tower cab were replaced by video wall, a range of screens, so that the controllers could still look out of the tower, even though potentially they might not need to sit on the airport at all. They could be at some distance. A good example of that is where the controllers, in fact, for London City Airport in London, are in fact based in our Swanwick Area Control Centre, about 110 kilometres to the southwest of London. So that's a digital tower, a digital remote tower. But as I mentioned already, if you stop there, you're actually missing huge amounts of additional marginal gains in terms of operational abilities and safety. So when I've taken that video view and I add it to all the other information that we have on the airport already, and I can take this from stand docking guidance, the electronic guidance that guides the pilots onto the parking stands, to all sorts of other data, from the CDM systems that I've mentioned at the start, where, you know, we can take all of that information, put it together, And now what you're actually looking at is rather than a mobile phone, you're now looking at a smartphone, because you can run different applications for different purposes. So I can do something for stand management optimization. I could do something in terms of the pushback and taxi out kind of operations, and then the runway departure and arrival operations as well. So we can kind of focus applications on different parts of the process. And that for me is where digital towers are now. Plus, the digital tower is very different to a physical tower. A physical tower has a capacity, and generally you can fit as many people in it as it was designed for, which is, you know, a handful of people. In the digital environment, where that view, the best view that anybody's got of the airfield, can be provided directly to any stakeholder within that airport environment. They could be in airport operations, they could be in stand planning, they could be in airline operations, turn management, air traffic control. Everybody can have the same information. And digitally, you're effectively getting thousands of people inside of the control tower cab, where they all share the same understanding, the same information, and they're all working towards the same goal, rather than having separate functions in different locations, handing over responsibility and hoping that the next person will prioritize, you know, that particular flight in the same way that you've been prioritizing it.
Yeah.
Did you know that during the Falklands War in 1982, there was a plan to put the Black Buck raids on steroids by sending an Avro Vulcan to bomb airfield targets on mainland Argentina, potentially returning to RAF Waddington the long way round via Chile, Easter Island, Tahiti, Hawaii, the USA and Canada? Did you also know that during the Second World War, a proposal was made to build B-29 superfortresses in the UK, powered by Bristol Centaurus engines? If your answers to the above are yes, you're probably a regular reader of The Aviation Historian, the quarterly journal, print and digital, that explores the less well-trodden paths of flying history. If your answers are no, visit theaviationhistorian.com and see what you're missing.
G'day, I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran from Plane Crazy Down Under.
And you're listening to Extended.
You've talked a lot about the people and how the workload is potentially being eased by the use of technology. How's that affecting the culture and operation of NATS? Those people, I know you're always looking to recruit really good, high quality people. In fact, we've had some of your colleagues on the show. It's fascinating to talk. Very, very diverse backgrounds from some of these individuals. How is this sort of technology landing with them? Because in the real world, AI, people are worried about their jobs. They're worried about, is this going to take over the world? Is eventually this thing going to learn how to do it all without us? How's this sort of technology landing with the people?
Well, like I say, because it's not technology for technology's sake, it's not there as a replacement. This is all about how we can improve the air traffic control, the service delivery, the experience effectively in the end, when we fly as passengers, you know, we appreciate that what we do on our day to day, you know, we receive as a service the other way around. So everything that we can improve, whether that's through, you know, our time-based spacing tools, to our digital towers, to AI support, you know, that basically is there for us to be able to, you know, work smarter, improve how we operate. As an organization, as a group of individuals in terms of our controllers, our engineers, as I say, we've always focused on trying to continually improve. You know, I wouldn't name a particular sports team, but you look at any sports team, they don't stay doing the same thing. They're always training. They're always looking at how they can employ new techniques, new equipment that will just give them that edge. So I see it the same way, really. You know, it's, right. It's the way that you introduce the technology. So again, if people understand what it can do for them, then they'll adopt it. You know, we've all done that with our smartphones and, you know, use them to an extent that can almost not remember what life was like without them. Maybe yeah. That's not always a good thing, but but we can do so much more with them. You know, and I go back to the experience of traveling through the airport and just being able to, you know, kind of, you know, be in the right place at the right time, check in, do all the sorts of things that that were maybe not the enjoyable bits of travel. You know, so effectively, it's the same thing when you're introducing this kind of change into a work environment. But so far, major changes that we've brought in have been very well received because people can understand what it can do for their you know, the work that they're trying to do.
Yeah, and those big corporates, the airlines, the airport operators, how are they received in this technology and the improvements that you're bringing to them?
Yeah, well, I think particularly since it's widened out, it's become more about digitization and smarter working, but across the entire airport, you know, we're seeing airport operators and airlines very much keen that air traffic service providers adopt this. You know, we've got examples of the Searage technology, which is used by Delta Airlines, for example, in LaGuardia. They manage their own apron area around their terminal. They have their own terminal, much like British Airways has at Heathrow and any other major carrier has at its major hubs. So they've moved to a digital solution from Searage. We're doing so at smaller airfields like Farnborough in the UK and larger airports, you know, like Heathrow, in terms of being able to provide better backup facilities. So that's our first project in terms of, you know, a contingency tower. So airlines see the benefits of having a schedule that is more robust. Their schedules are their schedules, but, you know, effectively the fact that
predictability.
An air traffic agency can deliver that and an airport can deliver that, you know, that they, I think that's why they see a value in it. Likewise, you know, the airports that we're as an organization contracted to provide the air traffic management, you know, they see those benefits. And they also, from you know, discussions we've been having with airports around the world, but particularly in the UK, you know, since COVID and diversification of their operations, you know, bringing in new airspace users, again, this is another opportunity which we've been showing very recently across the industry in terms of the way that NATS is moving to integrate new airspace users, drones, eVTOLs, you know, the electronic vertical takeoff vehicles. Yeah. So that it the aim basically being that that airspace can be accessed by all, including new airspace users, but in an efficient and a safe way. That's good for airports because they, you know, can maintain their relevance. They can also, you know, bring in new green technologies as well. You know, if you look at sort of electronic vehicles, whether they're either driving in or whether they're flying in, but those kind of new users have a different type of equipage to traditional airlines. Yeah. So again. Yeah. You need to be able to, as the service provider in the center of all of that, be able to adopt the new technologies that they use, communicate with them directly through digital means as well as voice means to crewed aviation. So you know, I mention all of these things really because I think there's a rapid move towards an expansion of the industry. More demand on service providers like NATS, and so airlines, airports, air traffic service providers, particularly NATS, we see this as being the logical way forward in terms of what's needed. I think adoption should not be a difficult path.
Right. Okay. Now, I was fascinated by seeing the work that NATS is doing with digital twins and hearing some of the the case studies about those. And can you just tell us about how NATS is using digital twins, what a digital twin is in your world, and how that's proving of use to the air traffic control system?
Yeah, I mean that's one of those kind of descriptors that can mean lots of things to lots of different people. And I think even across NATS, we have kind of different cases in terms of what our twins are. So we have everything from sort of airspace models and where we're looking at deploying artificial intelligence within the sort of en route environment, so between airports as aircraft are moving along the kind of motorway networks. So we've got digital twin environments there, and testing how AI can support controllers. So we've got Project Bluebird and that type of thing. In the airport environment, the digital twin really for us in particular is in our laboratory environment. So we've got particularly in the UK where we're based, we've got our Heathrow lab environment, which effectively is a digital control tower inside of the physical air traffic control tower at Heathrow. It takes and consumes all of the live flight data, as well as having the video data. So all that analog data, the 70% I spoke about earlier, is digitized, presented in a what looks like a remote tower. But the key thing is that there is a digital platform underneath there from Sirius Technologies, which enables us to process all of that information and test various use cases, functionalities, capabilities. That's where we've been testing our AI runway monitoring system. So that's another digital twin, I guess you could call it. But from our perspective, it's a route to operationalization of new technology.
Right. OK. Let's then talk a little bit about resilience, because the great fear of the people like me who live in the analog world, still clinging desperately to it, is what happens if something breaks, is damaged or there's a fall. What sort of resilience is getting built in to this new technology that we're adopting?
Yeah. So, again, as I mentioned, safety is at the forefront. So and all of our systems are introduced with their own safety cases. So effectively, we document, kind of all of the different scenarios that the system needs to operate within, including various, potential system failures. So the systems are then architected such that there are no single points of failure. So that can be multiple cameras. It can be use of gap filling cameras that pan into position if you lose a single fixed camera in an array, backup arrays if you've lost the primary array. The layers of data from optical through to radar. So effectively, you have to have multiple failures before you get to a level where the system is degraded to the extent that it affects the operation.
Right.
So there is always a balance in terms of the how much backup you require, and each of our operations we assess individually in terms of not from a safety perspective, but from a business resilience perspective. Because again, you can have additional layers of resilience there purely because it's important to be able to deliver the same kind of service. Though safety is way above that minimum sort of business level. So the business level side of things is something that we assess particularly airports. We assess with the individual airports in terms of how many backup systems they require, or whether they're we use a radar only environment. And generally, it will be dependent upon the level of traffic, so that if you're operating with every sensor available, you operate, kind of Heathrow levels of traffic, with perhaps lesser layers of surveillance. You right. offer a smaller capacity, but that's perfectly deliverable with the full array or the smaller array. So effectively, from a business perspective, neither airport is impacted from a business perspective, and both airports can operate at a safety layer. But one needs to deliver 1,400 flights a day. The other one maybe needs to deliver 150 flights per day. So we size them appropriately because, again, every airport is a commercial business, so it will make an investment in its technology.
Yeah.
But the technology can be sized, and that's the key.
Right. Now, before I let you go, Andy, I was fascinated to hear about the work you're doing around the world. We've mentioned Eurocontrol, and obviously that's close to home for us here in the UK. But tell us a little bit about how NATS is extending its reach into places like Hong Kong and New York.
So, we've expanded our presence in terms of we have bases now. We've got offices in Singapore, Hong Kong, Delhi, in Abu Dhabi, as well as in London. Those bases kind of spread around, particularly where a lot of the customer base is for us. So we also have acquisitions. So we acquired Series Technologies based in Canada, and they have a large number of existing customers. So effectively that kind of that amalgamation and also physical presence kind of enables us to provide technology and technical support in all those different geographical locations. Some of our biggest deployments most recently have been in places like Hong Kong. Hong Kong has the largest digital tower deployment in the world, more than 200 cameras in that system, deployed over a number of phases as the airport expands from a 2-runway to a 3-runway airport, and basically covering both the air traffic control operations, and they have more than one air traffic control tower there already because of the size of the airport. So we have a hybrid digital tower solution inside those physical towers. The airport is establishing an apron control unit, so that is going completely digital from Searage. And there is also the operations center, the integrated operations center, where it's kind of the whole control center for the airport outside of the two towers. But because they're all operating on the same digital platform from Searage, effectively the entire airport is within that sort of same control room digitally. And that I think is a guiding light really in terms of that's where airports need to be in now, and that's where they're headed for, I think. So I think Hong Kong's a great example, but certainly close to home, London Heathrow and some of the other airports in the UK like Farnborough, we're deploying this technology. So it's across that sort of global patch for us. Same technology in terms of digital tower platform and data sharing. So you know, Hong Kong to Farnborough, you know, there's a solution out there, and that's what we see.
Okay, so you must have a riveting to-do list, Andy, putting you on the spot. I was going to put you on the spot for some stats, but they're so overwhelming, I'm not quite sure that's fair to do. But you must have some really exciting things you're working on now. What can you tell us about that you're working on in the short and medium term? And where's all this going for the future?
Yeah, well, there are lots of airports that are in conversation with us at the moment in terms of being able to have that shared data picture, rationalize their assets. So rather than replacing whole huge CCTV systems that have limited use cases, you can't use them for operational air traffic control, for example. You know, they are talking because they're seeing a benefit in investing once, but using for multiple purposes. So that's what I'm focused on at the moment. There's a lot of discussions at major airports, across the world. As I say, certainly In terms of ones that I can absolutely talk about, then Hong Kong is an ongoing sort of phased deployment. And then very close to home, Farnborough, where we're improving the existing control tower by adding optical surveillance through cameras and also integration of automatic dependent surveillance broadcast, ADSB. So we're enhancing the ground surveillance considerably of that airfield. So that will help them to continue to provide a very safe and efficient service. And one that's under the spotlight every couple of years when we have the air show. So it'll be nice that not this coming air show, but the one after that will be effectively a digital air show from our perspective.
Wow, that's fascinating. So finally, Andy, we've talked about how changes have influenced the service today over the last decade or two. Where do you see this going in the next decade or two? Where do you see the technology evolving to?
I think more of the same in terms of being able to all work to one plan. And I just see that effectively becoming more efficient. So, when I was involved in the first collaborative decision-making CDM deployments in the UK, you know, we were working towards agreements in terms of a target off-blocks time where the aircraft would leave the parking stand and a target start approval time, the time at which it would get the approval from ATC, of plus or minus 5 minutes, which, you know, when you consider how many aircraft land at Heathrow in a 10-minute period, plus or minus 5 minutes, that's quite considerable. So the 10-minute window will be narrowed. And my aim basically is that you get away from having uncertainty and you just have, definitive points at which everything will occur and everyone is expecting that to occur. So it makes everything from ground handling to air traffic control more efficient. It makes the experience better for all of us as passengers. So that's where I see us going on the back of the technology we're deploying right now.
So, Andy, what makes everything you do so amazing?
I think for me, well, I've spent so much time in air traffic control and in airport operations because it's such an exciting environment to work in. So that's what makes every day worth getting up for, really. And the kind of technology we have available now just means that the possibilities are infinite.
Okay. Andy, where can we find you and Nats online? Can we get in touch with you, follow you? I know Nats also does its own podcast, which is really good. How can we find out about those things?
You can indeed, yeah. So we have our Altitude podcast. We've got regular subjects on that one. So keep an eye on what's there. You can do that by looking at nats.aero, which is our publicly available website. And you'll also, by sort of drilling down into that, if you look into the products and services, you'll find from my area, Digital Towers. And there's more videos if you really do want to listen any more to me. But certainly, I think more than the listening to me, you can see what some of our systems are doing. We've got case studies and explanations as to how this kind of technology would be relevant to you as an individual in the industry, to airports, to airlines.
Absolutely fascinating, Andy. Thank you so much. That's it. We'd like to thank White Hearts and Mick Oakey at the Aviation Historian for all of his support. You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter X, and you can find Tim, Ellie and Gareth on the extended Twitter, Facebook, Threads and Instagram feeds. That's it. With the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from Andy.
Thank you very much for having me.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended. our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. The programme's produced with a Creative Commons licence.
Please leave us a review wherever you play your podcast. It genuinely helps grow our programme and broaden its reach. You can also review the programme and leave us feedback on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to email us, our email address is getinvolved@aviationextended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended.
From across the globe, from the centre of aerospace, and now to you.
The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
Extend it!
This is XTP Media.